So the fox plotted to avoid this unwanted result. One day the lion came across the fox groaning, holding his head. "What's the matter?" "Oh, I have a terrible headache." "Can I help you?" "Well, I really don't know what to do. I've taken all the pills I can." "Oh, yes, I remember hearing from a gypsy that if someone bound your wrists and your ankles and your blood circulation was constricted, this would clear your head. Would you bind me?" The lion agreed, and he trussed up the fox, and about an hour later, the fox pronounced his head clear. Some weeks later, the lion had a headache, and all of the pills, with and without aspirin, with and without bufferin, didn't help one bit. So he bethought him of his friend the fox, and he asked the fox to tie him up, to restrict his circulation, to clear his head. And the fox gladly complied, and no sooner was the lion imprisoned than the fox took up a stone and beat him to death. Now, this medieval fable is not the usual kind of pulpit illustration. It illustrates the law of the jungle much more than any law of civilization. But in its own way, it's a very apt and telling comment on the fearfulness of power, even of the most quiescent and seemingly beneficent of power. The powerless fear the man of power, whatever be his professed intention. Translate lion as Whitey and fox as Stokely Carmichael, and you have an amazingly contemporary fable. Now, heaven has always been pictured as up there because it is clearly not down here. In this world, men are cruel, and some men are vicious, some are paranoid, some are sadistic. Many are greedy, and a goodly number foolish. And any philosophy which is worth its salt must surely open the eyes of the simple and force the innocent to accept the simple fact that the world does not echo or reflect their own innocence. Now, religion has often been accused of painting pretty pictures, of putting rose-colored glasses on, and of talking of a world which is unreal, talking about men and women who are somehow saintly as no man is saintly, who are somehow decent in a way, in a consistent way, that no man, presumably, is fully decent. Now, I cannot speak for other faiths, but I can say for our own. We have always encouraged our people to see life for what it is and as it is. I'll give you the rather clear-eyed, hard-boiled, proverbial wisdom which was read from Ecclesiastes this morning about wealth and about power and about poverty and about folly. I'll give you the book of Genesis, which begins with Eve's deceit of Adam, when she entices him to eat of the forbidden fruit, which continues with the fratricide Cain, destroying his brother Abel, which tells us of young Jacob and his mother conspiring to get the unmerited birthright, and of the brothers of Joseph selling their youngest brother into slavery and lying to their father that Joseph has been killed. Our Bible pictures men in all of their many colors, in all of their dark colors. There are no illusions. And my text this morning is another such clear-eyed little book, one which I had occasion some weeks ago to pick up and to reread, and I'd like to share my thoughts on it with you this morning. It's a medieval book written some 800 years ago called Sefer Sha'ashuim, the Book of Delight. It was written by a physician in Barcelona, Yosef ben Meir Zabara. And in that unique medieval way, it's a potpourri, an anthology of fables, of legends, of incidents, of proverbs, of wisdoms, of maxims, of medical theories, a hodgepodge of the knowledge of the day, but from a uniquely Jewish point of view. Now, Zabara was a clinician, and a good one, apparently. Like all good doctors, he had the ability to see things for what they were, the willingness to describe a tumor as a tumor, a cancer as a cancer, not to blush before the ugliness, the unseemliness of the wound. He saw life for what it is, and he described life as he knew it, a world in which men do not need to invent devils because we are capable of every deviltry ever known. He tells the story of a devil. This particular devil had spent some months in a village of gentlefolk, and he'd been completely frustrated. He wanted to sow confusion and controversy, but the people were good people, and they went about their way, and they didn't pay much attention to this stranger in their midst. And as he was packing his bags in the local inn, the chambermaid came to him, and she recognized him, and she said, "Devil, where are you going?" And he said, "I must go. I must be about my work, and I can't make any business here." And she said, "You can't make business. It's very easy to sow confusion and controversy. I'll show you how you do it." She went down the hall, and she knocked on the door of a room, and the lady who lived there answered the door, and while she was making up the beds in the room, she turned to the lady and she said, "I've just come from outside the inn and I saw your husband in the arms of another woman." And the woman was thrown into confusion. "What can I do? What can I do?" And the chambermaid said to the woman, "I know a remedy. Tonight, when your husband is sleeping, take a razor and cut 3 hairs from his head. And I've been told that this is a remedy which will guarantee that your husband remain faithful to you all of your life." Well, this woman, beside herself, agreed to do it. And then the chamber lady left, and she went out from the hotel, and she found the husband. And she whispered to him, "I've just come from your room, and I overheard your lady in the arms of a lover, and they were planning to kill you tonight." And the husband came into the room and went to bed, feigning sleep. And that night he saw his wife approaching the bed with a razor in her hand, and what could he believe? He grabbed the hand and they wrestled, and somehow while they were wrestling, the razor cut the woman's throat and she died. And her family vowed to take vengeance on his family, and his family vowed to take vengeance on hers, the Montagues and the Capulets. And 220 people were dead before the malicious work of this chamber lady was complete. And what's Zabara saying? Beware of the mendacious, beware of the malicious. There are people among us who delight in sowing confusion, simply in creating anger, bitterness, violence between people for the sheer perversity that's in it. But he's saying more. He's saying that there are always people who can outdo the devil and his own work. That we don't need to invent the dark demons of the night. That within us is the guile and the cunning with which we can achieve those same ends. Zabara was always nonplussed by the cunning of some people and by the gullibility of others. There's a particular kind of human being who's particularly impressed by experts. Now, the fact that you're an expert in Medicine, of course, qualifies you as an expert in all other fields of life, or that you're an expert in the rabbinate qualifies you in all other areas of disciplines and human knowledge. And he tells this wonderful story in the course of this book. A fox coveted the cave of a leopard. And to get the leopard to leave his cave, because leopards are stronger than foxes, he told the leopard of a beautiful valley, a paradise, where every kind of deer that was delicious to the palate of the leopards grazed. And the leopard thought that it would be good to go to this place, and the fox offered to lead him there. And so the leopard went home to talk it over with his wife, and his wife, Mrs. Leopard, who had a Yiddish cuff, she knew what the fox was about, and she advised the leopard not to go. So the leopard came back to the fox and confessed that they talked it over the night before and that he was going to stay where he was. "How can you do that?" said the fox. "Don't you agree with Socrates, the wisest of men, the greatest of experts?" And you recall that Socrates married one of the great shrews of all time, a woman named Xantippe. And Socrates at some place is reputed to have said, "Yes, counsel with your wife, listen to what she has to say to you, and then do the exact opposite." So the fox cited Socrates, and who's a leopard to argue with Socrates? So the leopard left his lair and schlepped his wife with him, and they went to the valley, which proved to be their death trap. Zabur comments in telling fable form, telling illustration, on the cunning of some men, the gullibility of many of us. And it's good wisdom, this to be wary. But wariness is not the sum of all wisdom, and the Bible certainly is not simply the proverbs learnt in the school of hard knocks, the statement, "At least get in the first blow." The greatness of our faith is that we were clear-eyed, but we realized that there was a world beyond the rough and tumble, that the world which was not coarse and ugly, that we were capable of growth, capable of wisdom, capable of achievement, capable of sensitivity, that we could pull ourselves up out of this slime, out of the jungle. How do we do it? It has something to do, perhaps most to do, with the goals that we set for ourselves. If our goals are acquisitive, the gaining of money, the getting of experience, the demanding of power, the climb for fame, if we're always trying to take for ourselves and our goals have an object, something we want, something we need, if they are physical and material, then we get down into the market and down into politics and down into the coarseness of life, and we are abraded by life and coarsened by it. There was a fox, a hungry fox this time, terribly hungry. And the fox came across a vineyard in which there was most succulent fruit. But the vineyard was completely closed in by a fence. And the fox sniffed his way around the fence and finally found a small breach between two boards. And he was all skin and bones, and he was able to creep through, to pull his way through the breach. Once he got into the vineyard, he gorged himself on the grapes, and he lived there happily throughout the long summer. And then, towards fall, the harvesters came. And the fox was afraid for his life if they found him in the vineyard, and he ran to that small hole in the wall, but this time he couldn't fit through. Big, round, roly-poly. Now we're the fox. We begin life and we see all the glories of the great world out there, and we want them. We'll make them ours. And many times we achieve a number of luxuries. We get a measure of fame or a measure of wealth. Our fortune is good. And we live among the dainties. And we forget the demands that life can really make among us, of us. Zabara's storyline in this medieval tale is an interesting one. His hero, like Zabara, is a physician. He's a good doctor, happy in his practice, quiet, peaceful at home. And one day a man comes to him, a journeyer, a wanderer, a demon in the shape of a man, and he says to him, Zabara, there's a great world out there, wonderful cities, views such as man has rarely seen. How can you live in these four walls? How can you live a life which is so humdrum and so routine? Live! And Zabara's enticed. And he leaves his practice, and he leaves his home, and he leaves the city where he's known to set out on the great way of life. And he finds it's a long way and a wearisome way. Oh, yes, there are great sights. He's intrigued at times. And he hears some wisdom. He meets some interesting people. And finally, this adventurer, this demon in human form, leads him to the most glorious of all cities. Tall buildings, marble palaces, sophisticated people, cold-eyed people, bitter between them, churlish young people. There is anger, there is violence among all of this luxury. And at the end, what does Zabara want? To return home, to do those things which were soothing to the soul. Stand ye in the old ways and see which are the good ways, and walk therein, for therein shalt thou find peace of mind. He quotes the prophets in the Bible. He discovers that there are really two goals which a man can set for himself. One goal is material, acquisitive. The other goal is to live, to be holy, to be sensitive, to love, to share, to serve, to be yourself. Now, those who choose this second goal must live in the real world. There's no escape from it. The fortunes of the world become your fortune. You need to survive. You need to supply the needs of your family. But you also live apart from the world. Gaining the world is not your goal, but gaining your soul. Efficiency, speed, wealth, these are not the ultimate goals, but understanding and quietness, and peace of mind, and peace with oneself. There was a woodcutter, and he married the daughter of a woodcutter. And the first day after their honeymoon, they were sitting around. She was darning the socks while he was cutting the wood. And she watched him cut for a while with his right hand and the axe banging down on the boards. And she finally said to him, she said, you're not very efficient about the whole thing. My father, the woodcutter, can hit with the axe with both hands. And when one arm becomes tired, he picks the axe up with the other and he can complete twice as much cutting in the course of a day and he is twice as wealthy as you'll ever be. The woodcutter complained that there was nothing he could do. He was right-handed, and that's the only way he could cut wood. But she insisted, and she nagged, and such is the way of women, that when his right arm got tired, he picked up the axe with his left, and he banged on the board, and he cut off his thumb. And now he could no longer manage the axe with his left hand, nor hold the axe with his right hand. What profit ye if ye gain the whole world, but lose your soul? This is the higher wisdom of our people. That there is a goal quite apart from the ordinary goals. To thine own self be true. That there is a purpose to life quite apart from the ordinary acquisitive purposes of life. To understand what this life is all about. To understand yourself. To obey the higher laws, to obey your truest self. And this, I believe, is the way in which we discover that, yes, heaven is up there, if it is at all, because it's not down here. But hell is down below, because also hell is not up here. This world is neither paradise nor the burning inferno. It's a place in which people live, struggling, hoping, searching. And the wise among us, the truly wise, reach out for those ends which are truly satisfying and meaningful to us.